Welcome to Conspiracy 101, where we learn about what's happening behind the scenes of governments and of other
UFOs.
Things.
Yeah.
Especially what's happening behind the scenes of Daniel's apartment.
I see the ghost. I see
that's
dead
right.
People.
The unexplained and the unseen, exactly. Well, Daniel, guess what today's topic's going to be? Are you ready?
I'm ready, Mr. Bob.
Top secret. Top secret. MK Ultra.
What is that top secret?
Have you ever heard of MK Ultra? Have you ever heard this term?
Mr.
MK
Bob,
Ultra?
What is this?
No?
Me cult? No.
Well.
This is my first time.
I will tell you. So
yes,
MK Ultra
please.
Is the CIA's clandestine search for mind control. What you're about to hear is not science fiction. It's documented declassified fact from 1953 to 1973. The Central Intelligence Agency secretly funded and conducted experiments on unwitting human subjects in an attempt to develop techniques for psychological manipulation, interrogation, and behavioral control. The story of MK Ultra is a story of Cold War paranoia, institutional hubris, and profound betrayal of the public trust, with consequences that echo through this day. To understand MK Ultra, we first have to understand the world in which we were born. In the early 1950s was a time of profound anxiety in the United States. The Soviet Union had just tested its first nuclear weapon. China had fallen to Mao's communists. And on Korean Peninsula, American soldiers were dying in a brutal, confusing war. In this climate of existential fear, American intelligence agencies were desperately searching for any advantage, including one over the minds of men.
Mm-hmm.
The spark ignited MK Ultra was a phenomenon the press called brainwashing. During the Korean War, footage and reports emerged of captured American POWs making statements that appeared to support communist ideology, some even seeming to defect. American officials were stunned. How could trained soldiers turn against their country? The answer, many believed, was some kind of advanced psychological technique developed by the Soviets, Chinese, or the North Koreans. The fear, largely exaggerated, as we now know, set off a frantic race within the CIA to not only defend against this supposed techniques, but to develop and weaponize our own. MKUltra didn't emerge out of nowhere. It had predecessors. Project Bluebird, launched in the 1950s, focused on defensive interrogation methods, trying to understand how an enemy might control someone's mind and how to prevent it. Project Artichoke followed in 1951, taking more offensive approaches. Researchers began experimenting with hypnosis, stimulants, and early psychoactive drugs, including morphine and the newly synthesized compound called LSD. Each of these programs pushed ethical boundaries further. Each prepared the groundwork for something far more expansive and disturbing. On April 13, 1953, CIA Director Alan Dulles formally authorized Project MK Ultra. The program was given the designation Ultra Sensitive, a classification that placed it entirely outside normal CIA oversight. Budget requests didn't go through the standard channels. Records were kept minimal by design. This was deliberate. The program's architects knew what they were doing and would be controversial, perhaps even criminal. By insinuating MKUltra from insulating MKUltra from an institutional review, they ensured that the experiments could continue unchecked for 2 decades. That's a long time, Dana.
2 decades. Yeah.
So for 2 decades, exactly. So at the center of MKUltra was one remarkable and troubling figure, Dr. Sidney Gottlieb, a chemist with a PhD from Caltech. Gottlieb headed the CIA's Office of Technical Service. He was, by all accounts, a genuinely eccentric character. He kept goats, folk dance, and stuttered. But he also was brilliant, methodical, and deeply committed to the Cold War mission. Gottlieb believed that chemistry could unlock the secrets of the human mind. He personally administered LSD to colleagues and subjects, once dosing an entire CIA holiday party without warning. He is, in many ways, the face of everything that went wrong with MKUltra. One of the most striking aspects of MKUltra is how far it reached. This was not a program run by a single secret bunker. It operated through an enormous network of institutions, universities, hospitals, prisons, and private research organizations. Much of the funding flowed through front organizations like the Society of Investigation of Human Ecology, which sounded like a legitimate academic foundation. Researchers at top universities received CIA money without always knowing the true source. In total, 80 institutions were involved, including 44 colleges and universities, 185 private researchers, and numerous prisons and hospitals. The program was woven into the fabric of an American research culture. Now let's turn to what MKUltra was actually trying to accomplish and the methods it used to get there. What the CIA wanted sounds like something from a spy novel, but the goals were coldly pragmatic. The ability to control human behavior, erase memories, and extract information from unwilling subjects. To achieve this, researchers pursued a range of chemical and psychological approaches that grew increasingly extreme over time. The program had three core objectives. First, behavior modification. Developing ways to fundamentally alter a person's personality, beliefs, or loyalty. Could an enemy agent be reprogrammed? Could a loyal soldier be turned? Second, induced amnesia. The ability to chemically or psychologically erase the subject's memory of what had been done to them or of the secrets they might later expose. Third, so-called truth serums, substances that could bypass conscious resistance and compel subjects to speak truthfully. Each of these objectives pushed deep into territory that was not ethical in any way necessarily, and that kind of unconscionable. So of all the substances MKUltra research has explored, and there were many, none captured the program's imagination quite like LSD. Lysergic acid, dielethamide, had only been synthesized in 1938, and its psychedelic properties were still poorly understood. But to the CIA, its power to dissolve ego boundaries and disrupt normal consciousness seemed to hold enormous promise. Gottlieb and his team were convinced LSD might be the key to unlocking the human mind. In a stunning display of that conviction, the CIA attempted to purchase the entire global supply of LSD directly from Sandoz Laboratories in Switzerland, effectively trying to corner the market on one of the world's most powerful psychoactive substances. Among the most disturbing of MKUltra's sub-projects was Operation Midnight Climax. Run by CIA operative George White, operating out of a safe house in San Francisco and New York, White recruited prostitutes to lure unsuspecting men to apartments that had been outfitted with one-way mirrors. Once there, the men were secretly dosed with LSD. CIA operatives watched from behind the mirrors, taking notes on how the drug affects behavior in an uncontrolled social setting. The subjects never consented. Most never even knew what had been done to them, and the program ran for years and was described in White's own diaries with a chilling casualness that speaks to how normalized these violations had become. Perhaps the most tragic individual case within the MKUltra was Subproject 68, conducted by Dr. Donald Ewan Cameron at the Allen Memorial Institute in Montreal. Cameron was a prestigious psychiatrist, president of both the American and Canadian Psychiatric Associations. He believed that mental illness could be cured by wiping the mind clean and rebuilding it from scratch. He called the process psychic driving. To achieve it, he subjected patients, many of whom had come to him seeking treatment for anxiety or depression, to massive doses of LSD, paralytic drugs, and electroconvulsive therapy administered at 30 to 40 times the standard intensity. Patients lost years of their memories. Some regressed to childlike states. None had consented to what was done to them, and the CIA funded the whole thing.
Funded.
A consistent and damaging thread running through MKUltra is who bore the cost of the research. It was almost never CIA employees or their families. The program disproportionately targeted people who were vulnerable, marginalized, or simply without power. Prisoners were often offered heroin or sentence reductions in exchange for submitting to drug trials. Not exactly meaningfully informed consent was given. Psychiatric patients were subjected to the most extreme procedures because, as researchers coldly noted, they could not fight back. And ordinary citizens, people who had few drinks in a bar or visited a doctor or attended a college research session, were dosed without their knowledge or consent. The program's architects knew exactly what they were doing, and they chose their subjects accordingly. There is profound irony embedded in MKUltra's history. The program's early LSD experiments on college students conducted at places like Stanford and the University of California introduced a generation of young Americans to psychedelic experience. Among those who participated as paid volunteers was Ken Kesey, who would go on to write One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and become one of the defining figures of the 1960s counterculture. Poet Allen Ginsberg and Robert Hunter, who would write the lyrics for The Grateful Dead, also took part. The CIA's attempt to weaponize LSD inadvertently helped launch one of the most transformative cultural movements in American history. We've talked about LSD and chemical experiments, but MKUltra's methods extended far beyond drugs. Researchers explored the outer limits of human psychology and psychological endurance through a range of techniques that today would be classified without question as torture. And these methods had real victims, real people whose lives were shattered by what they had done to them in the name of national security. Beyond chemical testing, MKUltra researchers pursued three major non-pharmaceutical approaches. First, sensory deprivation. Subjects were confined for weeks in soundproof chambers or lightless rooms, their minds stripped of all external input until the psyche began to fracture. Second, electroshock therapy. Not in therapeutic doses, but massive repeated shocks designed to cause what researchers euphemistically called depatterning, the complete erasure of existing personality and memory. Third, hypnosis, the search for what we might recognize today from fiction as a Manchurian candidate, a person who could be programmed through hypnotic suggestion to carry out acts, including assassination, without conscious awareness or later recollection. These were not fringe ideas. They were serious research programs with significant funding. The human cost of MKUltra is perhaps most vividly embodied in the story of Frank Olson. In November 1953, Olson, a biological warfare scientist, attended a CIA retreat at Maryland Cabin. Without his knowledge, Sidney Gottlieb put LSD in his after-dinner drink. In the days that followed, Olson became increasingly disturbed. He told colleagues he wanted to leave the CIA. He was brought to New York and placed under observation. And then on November 28th, he fell from the 10th floor of the Statler Hotel. His death was ruled a suicide. His family accepted the explanation for decades. But when his body was exhumed in 1994, a forensic pathologist found evidence of blunt force trauma to the skull inconsistent with the fall. His son Eric had spent his life pursuing the truth, and the full story of what happened to Frank Olson remains to this day unsolved. For 20 years, MKUltra operated in the shadows. The CIA's mechanisms for keeping secrets, classification, compartmentalization, front organizations, held remarkably well. But secrets of this magnitude rarely stayed buried forever. In the mid-1970s, a series of investigative breakthroughs began to pull the program into the light, and what was revealed would shock the nation. The story of MKUltra's exposure begins paradoxically with a cover-up. In 1973, facing the growing scrutiny of post-Watergate Washington, CIA Director Richard Helms ordered the destruction of MKUltra files. Thousands of documents were shredded. The program's architects, including Sidney Gottlieb, believed they had successfully buried the evidence. What they didn't know was a batch of financial records, roughly 20,000 documents, had been misfiled in a records warehouse rather than destroyed. Those documents would survive, and they would eventually tell the story that Helms had tried to erase. The public first learned of MKUltra through investigative journalism. In December 1974, New York Times reporter Seymour Hersh published a landmark expose revealing that the CIA had conducted massive illegal domestic surveillance operations. The article didn't detail MKUltra specifically, but it triggered a chain of investigations that would congressional oversight committees, newly emboldened after Watergate, began demanding answers, and the documents that had survived Helms' purge began to surface. The most consequential of these investigations was the Church Committee's formerly the Senate Select Committee to Study Governmental Operations with Respect to Intelligence Activities, chaired by Senator Frank Church of Idaho. Beginning in 1975, the committee conducted a sweeping investigation into the abuses by CIA, FBI, and NSA, and other intelligence agencies in the United States. It uncovered assassination plots against foreign leaders. It exposed illegal domestic surveillance programs, and it documented MKUltra in damning detail. The Church Committee's findings were a watershed moment in American democratic history, the first time Congress had truly confronted the scope of what an intelligence agencies had been doing in the dark. The unraveling of MKUltra happened through several key milestones. In 1974, Seymour Hersh's New York Times report put illegal CIA domestic spying on the front page. In 1975, the Rockefeller Commission, an executive branch investigation, provided an initial accounting of CIA abuses. Later that year, the Church Committee conducted the most comprehensive congressional inquiry, leading to the first real declassification of MKUltra objectives. And in 1977, the Kennedy hearings led to the discovery of those 20,000 misfiled financial documents, the records that Helms' shredding order had missed. Each step revealed more of the picture. The full picture, even today, remains incomplete. MKUltra's legacy is complex and sobering on the positive side. The program's exposure directly led to strict codification of informed consent requirements to human research. The principle that no one may be subjected to experimentation without their knowledge and freely given agreement. These protections, now embedded in federal law and medical ethics codes, were a direct response to MKUltra had done. The 1977 Senate hearings concluded with the summary finding that bears repeating: the CIA's mind control program was, in their words, a flagrant violation of the fundamental rights of American citizens and the betrayal of the ethics of scientific research. Whoa, Daniel.
Interesting.
What do you think? Do you have any questions?
Well,
here's some of our some of our other sources.
Okay. Well, if we compare our topic last week, well, they are the same thing, I think, right? It's a political agenda, right? About UFO.
It's crazy. So the interesting thing about MKUltra, and this is not directly related to MKUltra, but the man who shot Robert Kennedy, Sirhan Sirhan, who was, you know, sent to prison. I think he's dead at this point, but Sirhan, he may not actually be dead. Hold on, let me look and see here.
Still alive.
Is he still alive? I don't know. Let me see. Yeah, he's still alive. But he's been in prison ever since he shot Robert Kennedy. So anyway, there is some evidence that says that he may have not known that what he was doing. He may be a victim of something like an MKUltra type situation, because he has stated on multiple occasions that he does not remember shooting Robert Kennedy or why he would do it. So that's kind of scary. The same thing can be true for the recent shootings for Donald Trump. If you remember when he was campaigning, he got shot in the ear by a young man, and the weird thing was, he was for Trump. He was not against Trump. So people who knew him and so forth said that he was really quite a Trump fan. And yet he was the one that then tried to shoot the former president and presidential candidate at the time, Donald Trump, on that fateful day, right? So
yeah.
Again, we don't know because he was killed that day. We won't know for sure, but it sounds like that this could have been something similar for him, right? So brainwashing, not knowing what's happening. So it's kind of scary.
Scary indeed, just like a robot.
It's like a robot, exactly. Now, there's a thing, there was a show on TV called Dollhouse back in the 2000s. Let me get the, which is a very interesting show. I don't know if you can even watch it anymore. Let me look it up and see what it says. But it's basically about brainwashed killers.
Oh my God.
TV series from 2009 to 2010. Here, I can share this. So you can see it.
Yes.
There we go. It's a very good television show. Eliza Dushku. Dushku is the star right there. You see her picture right there. And it's about people who are brainwashed. So a shadowy organization uses mind wipe humans known technically as actives and colloquially as dolls who are imprinted with false memories and specialized skills for various tasks on behalf of paying clients. When they are not on assignments, they live in an underground dollhouse, a facility that protects them and provides for their needs, including food, exercise, sleeping pods, a little bigger than coffins. One of the dolls, a young woman named Echo, by her handlers, is slowly becoming aware of herself and what is going on. Meanwhile, at least two different people on the outside are trying to bring down the dollhouse, one by finding Echo and the other by using her. So it was a science fiction drama thriller on Fox back in 2009. That basically is what MK Ultra wanted to be. And I remember watching the show. It's a really good show. I only had two seasons. It was written by... created by Josh Whedon, who did Buffy the Vampire Slayer and all that kind of stuff, and has a lot of people that, you know, have gone on to other things. So Eliza Dushku is, you know, she's done a bunch of stuff since then as well. Alan Tudyk, or Turdyke, Tudyk, right here. I've got my mouse over him. He's been in a bunch of different stuff. Most recently, he was in a show called Resident Alien. Summer Glau was in the Terminator show. So, yeah, a lot of people went on to do other things. But it's a really interesting show and, you know, kind of relates to MK Ultra in a way that, you know, directly. There you go, Daniel. What do you think about all that?
Well, Mr. Bob, I think I believe that.
But I think at this Daniel... So we don't fall into this of MK Ultra. We probably should get some sleep and get something to eat.
Mm. That's a good idea, Mr. Bob. Sleep like a baby and I will eat by myself, okay? And, well, MK Ultra, whatever, if it's real or not, well, be careful out there.
Yes, be
they
careful.
They will assassinate
exactly.
You.
Don't take a bunch of LSD or get shock treatment. You'll be fine.
Yeah, you'll be fine. So, Mr. Bob, would you like to plug in something? I think I have a disconnection. Can you hear me?
Sure. You can catch me here at the 101s. This is Conspiracy 101, Trivia 101, Movie 101, Comedy 101, any of the 101s.
Once.
There you go.
Please. Please, plus your static radio, cats, Mr. Bob. Static radio, please. I think I have a disconnection,
yeah, you can
Mr.
Catch
Bob.
Me there,
you cannot hear me now. Yes. I have a trouble with my internet. I don't
know.
I can
hear you.
Try to
reconnect.
Yeah,
you dropped out
now
for
you can
a minute.
Hear me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, people, yes. Please support
All
us.
All right, everybody.
We're live after every Sunday, so please, to all social media. Mr. Bob, thank you so much for your time. Sleep like a baby, man. watching on people.
See you soon. I will. You take care.
Likewise. Likewise, likewise. Now my studio is frozen. I don't know what's happening on Riverside. I cannot stop it, Mr. Bob. My stuff is becoming gray. Okay, here we go. Here we go. Okay.